Good morning and welcome to today's oil market update with Callum McPherson. How are you today, Callum?
Good morning. Busy.
I can imagine, yeah. So there's massive falls in oil overnight with Brent going down to the low 30s. This follows on from the failure of the OPEC meeting last week as well. Can you take us through the main developments so far?
Certainly, yeah. So if we go back to last week, we had the OPEC meeting. The OPEC meeting actually is really consists of two meetings. So the meeting on the Thursday is just OPEC members, and then the meeting on Friday was OPEC members plus the other signatories to the deal, such as Russia. And usually, an agreement has more or less been reached before the OPEC meeting starts. So the OPEC have their meeting and they may announce something, and it's already been agreed with the non-OPEC members, and then that's ratified again in the meeting the following day, or often the two meetings sort of run into one another. But this time the OPEC made the unusual step of saying that production should be cut by 1.5 million barrels per day as a reaction to the coronavirus demand disruption. Without having the agreement of the other parties, to the non-OPEC parties to the agreement, most notably Russia. And then, of course, as we know, on Friday, the Russians didn't agree with this sharp cut to production. So predictably, the market then fell heavily because it was unclear, in the absence of that agreement, whether not only the issue is not just simply that the extra 1.5 million barrels per day of cuts had not been put through. The question is, well, what happens to the deal in general? Because the deal was due to expire at the end of this month, and at the very least we would have expected the OPEC and non-OPEC members to agree to extend that cut. But really there has been no agreement on anything. There was no press release about the meeting on Friday on OPEC's website. So it seemed relatively clear that the deal was dead. And consequently, there are no longer any production limits in place. That message was underlined in incredibly dramatic fashion over the weekend when Saudi Arabia announced its latest updates to its official selling prices for April. Now, what the Saudis do is that they price, and indeed other OPEC members, they price their sales of crude as spreads to benchmarks. So, for example, Saudi sales of crude to Asia are priced off Middle East crude reference, and one of the most important grades, so-called Arab Light, was priced at a premium of +3 for March, but the Saudis have now announced that's being cut to -3. So an extraordinary move in this in the selling price. The message that sends to the market is that Saudi Arabia wants to compete to supply. And in addition to that, there have also been some suggestions, some reports that the Saudis have been talking about increasing production. So what the market has taken from this is that the Saudis are back to the strategy of competing for market share, of increasing production, that all OPEC, non-OPEC deals are now off. There are no production limits. And so that is why prices have collapsed.
Okay, so there's a lot going on at the moment. So what happens next?
Well, there are probably two main possibilities here. One is that the Saudis are trying to do is to bring the Russians back to the negotiating table, to show them they mean business, that they can't be messed around, and to show them that they are prepared to force the market down. If that's what they need to do. Will this work? I don't know. The main advantage that the Russians have is that they're not their currency is not pegged to the dollars, and indeed the Russian ruble has weakened dramatically. It had been weakening anyway as oil prices fell and has shot up to 75 rubles per dollar, or that sort of area this morning. It had been trading at 63 in April, so that's 20% depreciation. Now, that doesn't by any means completely offset the fall in oil prices, but it does substantially reduce it. So Russia, perhaps on that basis, is in a stronger position, but nevertheless, it may make the Russians think twice. And this is one possibility, that we do actually have another emergency meeting, and actually the Russia and Saudi Arabia can come to some sort of agreement. We'll see. Really no idea how likely that is, to be honest. But failing that, really we're back to the market trying to balance itself in some way, and that could be a long and painful process.
Okay, so in effect, Saudi seems to be going back to the market share strategy as it did in 2015-16. So this failed to hold US shale production then, but it could be different this time?
Well, I think the key difference between now and sort of 2015-16 is that that was a period of relatively strong demand. The prices were driven down then by an oversupply, not because for some reason demand was weakening. Now, at the moment, now though, of course, we have got weakening demand or weak demand, because of coronavirus, and although things seem to be improving in China, and maybe that means that Chinese demand will start to pick up again, the problem is only just starting to begin in Europe and perhaps the US. So if we see sort of comparable disruptions to or anything like the kind of disruptions in Europe and the US that we had seen already in China, then this the coronavirus demand disruption will not be a blip. It could be several months of serious demand disruption. So for the Saudis to start a price war in that environment is considerably more challenging for oil markets than it was back in 2016. Now, the other thing to consider, though, is looking at U.S. shale, is that U.S. shale is much more significant now than it was then. I mean, then it was a few million barrels per day. Now we're talking about 9 million barrels per day of production is coming from U.S. shale. And that's actually comparable to Saudi production. The other thing about shale is that it does decline quite rapidly. It's just the nature of shale production. So that it probably a new well might decline by something like 2/3 over a year, and that means that 2/3 of that 9 million of U.S. crude that comes from shale needs to be replaced every year. So that's 6 million barrels per day. So that's a challenge, and in this kind of price environment, people are not going to be drilling lots of new wells. However, they don't necessarily need to, because there's a large backlog of so-called drilled but uncompleted wells, and these are wells that have been drilled and can relatively easily be put into production with limited additional cost. And there are about 7,500 of these so-called drilled but uncompleted wells, and that actually equates to probably about 6 million barrels per day of production. On top of that, U.S. shale producers tend to hedge themselves to quite a large extent, and this will insulate them against the downturn, as it did in 2016. So inevitably, there will be if this sort of price environment continues, there will inevitably be a reaction in terms of U.S. supply, but it could take a number of months. So this is not going to. This is not going to lead to U.S. production stopping very quickly. A completely different angle to this, though, of course, is the reaction of asset markets to what's going on. And I would certainly imagine it's going to be very challenging for any U.S. Independent shale producer that needs to refinance debt and so on. So it could actually be things like that cause the problems, rather than the inability to to drill. So I mean, essentially, the likelihood of bankruptcies because of people running out of cash, I think, is probably quite high.
Okay, so where could we go from here then?
Well, from a technical point of view, it's quite tricky. I mean, we've already seen the low 30s overnight. Brent was trading at around $36 per barrel when I came away from the desk. And that takes us back to the lows of early 2016. So there isn't really much in the way of technical support that we can look at around here. We had the low of early 2016 at about $27 per barrel. So there's that, but not a lot else really to hold on to. I mean, one thing we may see, given that there have been corresponding very heavy falls in equities overnight, you know, U.S. stock futures are limit down, so the market is actually in U.S. stock futures has actually stopped. So we don't even have a guide as to where the U.S. is going to open. But markets in Europe, we're seeing declines of the order of 10%, so extraordinary moves in equities, and that will certainly worry central banks. It may worry them enough to prompt them to take some kind of action. So we might see something like that. That might lead if that does happen, that might help oil prices in the short term. One other sort of glimmer of hope, I think, is that the coronavirus. Additional infections do seem to be slowing down in China, so you know, there's perhaps one thing to be a little bit optimistic about.
Certainly going to be an interesting week. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you.